From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, the coming of Armageddon. What a program we have for you in store tonight. And in a moment, I'll be talking with the attorney for Sirhan Sirhan, of course, the reported convicted assassin of Robert F. Kennedy. Here's what's happening. Sexual transmission of the Zika virus is more common than previously thought, according to the World Health Organization. After an emergency committee meeting, the UN Health Agency also said there was increasing evidence now of links between Zika and various birth defects. Zika is most commonly spread by mosquitoes, but several countries have reported cases of sexual transmission there, too. Hillary Clinton got derailed in Michigan by Bernie Sanders tonight. Sanders pulled off a shocking upset Tuesday night victory, beating Hillary Clinton in the Michigan Democratic primary, where some polls going into the race had him trailing by double digits, and wiping out Clinton's win earlier the night in Mississippi. And Republican frontrunner Donald Trump, meanwhile, has regained any momentum lost over the weekend against Ted Cruz, sweeping to convincing victories in Michigan and Mississippi, sending a message to the Republican establishment to jump on board or get out of the way. Cruz, by the way, wins tonight in Idaho. Hawaii results later on tonight. We'll be watching for that. Dr. John Curtis, he's been with us ever since these primaries started. Well, let's talk about the big story. Bernie Sanders came out of nowhere to derail Hillary tonight, John.
Well, and that was certainly, for Bernie, I think it was, the kind of payback for Hillary that he's been looking for. There was a moment in the debate that he had where, he raised the issue of the NAFTA treaty, which is something her husband signed in, and it lost a lot of jobs to Canada and overseas. And I think, in the upper Midwest, the Rust Belt areas of the country, people are losing jobs, good jobs, quality jobs. They had good factory jobs at one time up there. And, and I think that was the payback for her. It's like, look, you don't really understand what's happened up here. And, those free trade agreements have really hurt us. I think it's a chink also, George, in what lies ahead for Hillary. I think, most people believe that she'll get the nomination. The delegate math is almost impossible for Bernie at this point. But here's the problem for Hillary in the general election. You have a lot of disenfranchised, ordinarily union-type people, blue-collar people who want jobs, who want to really be able to make a living. And when you've got all these jobs, flying out overseas, and that's what Trump is talking about, and he's talking about reinvigorating, the manufacturing base of this country. It's a huge appeal to people, not just on the GOP side, but on the independent side and the Democrats.
Whether he can do it or not, but it appeals to everybody.
It sure does.
And John, of course, the Trump train just chugs along here. He's slowly getting to that delegate count. I think next Tuesday is going to be the big, big day, isn't it?
Well, I think next Tuesday is the game over day for the GOP. Because if Trump wins Florida, he doesn't really have to win Ohio, but if he wins both Florida and Ohio, and the insider group, the dirty politicians, the backroom deals that, we talked about this before, that the Mitt Romney scheming John Kasich to a so-called contested brokered convention where, millions of Republican primary voters are disenfranchised by some kind of backroom deal. I think they're going to have to switch gears and line the ducks up behind Trump next week if he wins Florida, and certainly if he wins Ohio.
All right, John, thank you so much. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. The West Virginia legislature has successfully overturned the veto of Democratic Governor Earl Ray Tomlin's veto in a bipartisan effort to enact permitless gun carry in the state. Now, beginning June 5th, anyone over the age of 21 who can legally possess a firearm will be allowed to carry it concealed on their person without having to obtain a permit. That's a big story out there. Well, a few weeks ago, and for the 15th time, officials denied parole for Sirhan Sirhan, convicted in the assassin of Senator Robert F. Kennedy, after hearing from another person who was shot that night and that person had called for Sirhan's release. Now, this decision came after Sirhan answered questions from the California parole panel for about 3 hours in a small windowless conference room. Now, during the hearing, Sirhan stuck to his previous account that he just did not remember the shooting in 1968 at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles after Kennedy won that Democratic presidential primary in California. He said he recalled being in the hotel, then going to his car and returning after realizing he simply had too much to drink. In a moment, I'll be talking with the attorney for Sirhan Sirhan, William Pepper, so stand by for that. An American student from Vanderbilt University was stabbed to death in one of three bloody terror attacks that rocked Israel just as Vice President Biden traveled and arrived in Tel Aviv to meet with leaders in an effort to stem Palestinian violence and mend frayed relations with the Jewish state. Iran has again threatened to walk away from its nuke agreement reached last year with global powers hours after the country breached international agreements by test-firing ballistic missiles. Dr. Jerome Corsi, of course, author of Atomic Iran. What's up with Iran, Jerry? Why are they violating all these agreements?
Well, I'm not sure Iran ever really intended to respect the agreements. It was a calculated tactic by Iran to get out from under the sanctions and literally have billions of dollars returned to Iran that the United States was holding. Clearly, this missile firing, ballistic missile firing, and several missiles were fired today from silos in central Iran. They hit targets 435 miles away, and it violates the UN Security Council Resolution 2231. Now, whether it technically violates the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which is the Kerry-reached agreement, is going to be debated, but it clearly seems to me an intentional, in-your-face kind of, we're going to develop, you know, ballistic missiles, which Iran is insisting upon, even though the treaty called for an 8-year suspension of developing ballistic missiles that could carry nuclear weapons.
So we're far from really having a great deal with Iran on this, aren't we?
Well, I don't think it was really any deal at all. I think Iran got the best of John Kerry and, you know, basically utilized to their advantage President Obama's wanting to come to a deal almost at any cost. Unfortunately, you know, those wanting to believe that this would restrain Iran are kind of facing the same situation we faced in the Clinton administration, thinking that working with North Korea to give them nuclear fuel would restrict their ability to develop nuclear weapons. And we all see what came of, you know, that framework agreement that was partly negotiated by former President Jimmy Carter with North Korea. It's fallen apart, and I think the agreement with Iran is destined to fall apart, too.
I think you're right, Jerry. Thank you so much. You know, listen to this story. It's been more than 100 years since the sinking of the Titanic, but research is still being done to understand the tragedy. Recently, scientists were able to make some surprising calculations about the iceberg that caused that luxury ship to go down. According to Grant Bigg of the Sheffield University out there in the United Kingdom, the iceberg is thought to have been around 100,000 years. Now, while the block measured about 400 feet long and protruded 100 feet above the water when the ship crashed into it, the iceberg likely started out being around 1,700 feet long when it began drifting away from the Greenland area. Up next, William F. Pepper joins me. We're going to be talking about the parole of Sirhan Sirhan. He's tried 15 times now. Also, William Pepper represented in a mock trial James Earl Ray, who pled guilty to the assassination of Martin Luther King. And then later on, William Pepper represented the King family in a civil suit and won. We'll talk about that, too, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest this hour, William Francis Pepper, barrister in the United Kingdom, admitted to the bar in numerous jurisdictions of the United States of America. Here, his primary work is international commercial law. Now, he has represented governments in the Middle East, Africa, South America, Asia. But the big stories, couple people that he has represented in a couple cases. William Pepper represents Sirhan Sirhan, the gunman convicted in the assassination of Senator Robert F. Kennedy back in June of 1968. Now, he was also the attorney for the late James Earl Ray in a mock trial that occurred back, I believe that was in the 90s, the early 90s. And then he represented the family of Martin Luther King as they sued civilly and won the case. I think they won just $100, but they proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that James Earl Ray was not the gunman. So, William, welcome back to Coast to Coast. We have followed your career, sir, for years, and it's good to have you back.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Let's talk a little bit about the Sirhan Sirhan case, the parole board once again denying his release. But somebody who was shot during that horrible day testified that there was another gunman involved. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I think the evidence pretty clearly indicates that there was a second gunman, and the second gunman was the real assassin of Bob Kennedy. Paul Schrade was the person to whom you're referring, who testified at the parole hearing, came to the parole hearing for the first time and apologized to Sirhan profusely. He indicated that he was so sorry that it had taken him so long to digest all of the evidence that was available to enable him to understand that Sirhan was not the shooter who killed Bob Kennedy. And Paul is 91 years old, and the commissioners, the two commissioners, attempted to silence him as he apologized to Sirhan and as he spoke to them and indicated that he had become convinced that an innocent man had been in prison. And indeed, Sirhan, as you know, has been in prison for nearly 50 years. Paul was an aide to Bob Kennedy. He was high up in the United Auto Workers Union, close to Walter Reuther, and was working with Kennedy in the California primary. And that's why he was in Los Angeles the night that Bob won. So he was very close to Robert Kennedy and very emotionally involved with the senator. It's very interesting because Paul and I shared that kind of alliance. I was Bob Kennedy's citizens chairman when he ran for the Senate in New York in 1964. I was just a kid at the time, and Bob asked me to head his campaign in Westchester County, which is a heavily Republican county in New York, and where I had a fairly large following of young people and good government groups of people, and the senator asked me to handle his campaign. So I became involved with him in that campaign as well. And in that case, much as in the instance of Martin Luther King, now, you know, I knew Martin only the last year of his life.
But you were close. You two were friends that last year.
Yeah, Martin and I became very close that last year of his life because I, when I came back from Vietnam, I published an article in your Ramparts magazine, which was published out there, of course, in California, and on the horrors of the war in Vietnam, the atrocities that were being committed by the Americans and the war crimes that were being committed by the Americans, which I viewed and visited and photographed. Martin read that article and asked to meet with me, and then when I opened the files to him, he literally wept in my presence and said he really had to oppose this war, asked me to head the National Conference for New Politics, which emerged as a third-party movement to effectively try to nominate Martin King and Ben Spock as an alternative to Lyndon Johnson in the 1968 election.
When I think back, William, at the tumultuous times we had in this country, it's unbelievable. We used to talk a lot about you. I was a news director back in St. Louis in the 70s, late 70s, and one of my reporters just loved the case. He knew James Earl Ray's brother, John Auble. I don't know if you remember John's name.
Yes.
But he just would not let it go. And he was one of the first people to come up to me, and he said, you know, James Earl Ray, because, you know, we're in the St. Louis area, and Ray was born in Alton, which wasn't too far away. He said, he's not guilty. And I went, John, what? What are you talking about? And
yeah, well, I have, that case has occupied me for 38 years. And I produced two books and now a third, which is coming out in June.
Well, we've got to get you back for that too, William, when it's out.
That's the end of the story. That, yep. And it's a devastating book. I have to tell you, nothing that you know about the case and James and the actual assassination of Martin has ever really surfaced. But now, finally, at the end of the day, in this new book, I have been able to reveal just it's frankly been a very depressing experience for me to have uncovered what I have with respect to that case. There's no question James was profiled, James was used and set up as a patsy. His whole escape was arranged. James never knew any of this, of course.
Was he there though, wasn't he?
Oh, he was there. He was under control. He had a handler. From the time he left, his escape was arranged. He had a handler who kept him under wraps and moved him around the country. Oh yes, he was there. He was set up very much the same way. excuse me. Very much the same way that Sirhan was set up, except in the case of Bob Kennedy's killing and the use of Sirhan. They involved a degree of mind control and hypnotism that was not present in the King assassination, and Sirhan had been programmed and set up and used and put on the scene for the same purpose of giving them a scapegoat or a patsy.
Well, let's definitely get you back here in June when the new work comes out on the James Earl Ray situation and Martin Luther King. Definitely. Exactly. And let's talk a little bit more about the Sirhan case. He was at the hotel, obviously. Was he a busboy then? Is that why he was there?
No, he wasn't. He went into the hotel because there were some parties going on, and it seemed like could be a fun evening for him, and so he went in there, and he was hanging out. He had some Tom Collins drinks. He was hooked up with a young woman in a polka dot dress, and she basically took control of him and moved him into the pantry and was with him in the pantry as the senator was rerouted through the pantry. Bob was not originally supposed to go that route, but he was rerouted. He was moved through the pantry, and she was in control of Sirhan, and was able through an actual touching and pinching in a strategic time to get him to stand up with a pistol that he had with him, and draw everyone's attention to him. He was in front of the senator all of the time. He was no closer than 3-4 feet in the front of the senator. Some people say 5 to 7 feet, but Bob, remember, was shot with 4 bullets from the rear.
From the back, yeah.
From the back at powder burn range in an upward angle. So whoever the second gunman was, he knelt down behind him, and he pressed the gun up against him, and of course raised his arm and put the final bullet into him through behind his right ear. Sirhan had no possibility of ever being in that kind of position to affect that kind of firing. I mean, he was always in front. The problem that Sirhan faced was that his lead attorney, very well-known criminal defense lawyer, Grant Cooper, himself was under a pending indictment throughout the entire trial
geez.
And through the case. Just never introduced evidence, never was an advocate for Sirhan's innocence.
Hold on for a second. We're going to hit this break, but I want to come right back, and we'll pick up from there. We'll also, we're going to run the phone numbers for you, and we'll take limited phone calls with William Pepper. I've only got him for an hour, a half hour left. So we're going to continue talking about this incredible case of Sirhan Sirhan. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we're going to take limited phone calls with our guest, William F. Pepper, the attorney, of course, for Sirhan Sirhan. I've got lots to talk with him about, and we don't have that much time, but we will get him back in June when his latest work comes out on the James Earl Ray case and, of course, Martin Luther King. Okay, welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, William Pepper with us as well. William, I knew Mohamed Emti Mahdi, who was a champion for Sirhan Sirhan. That guy just never gave up until he died trying to get him released as well. At what point, and let me ask something about you, because, I mean, you're a very high-profile attorney. You've handled major assassination-type cases. There's something, I suspect, that has you convinced that there's something wrong here, that there's some bigger picture, and we need to know about it. Am I right about that?
Yeah, well, I think that's true. I think the politics of political assassination just dominated this country, certainly in the 1960s, and critical leaders were just simply taken out because they threatened the vested interests, effectively the oligarchic interests, which prevailed once they were removed. And we see the results of it today. America is no longer a democracy, George, in my view. It's pretty clearly an oligarchy, and is dominated by enormous wealth at virtually every level of government. And dissent is suppressed. The mainstream media, control of the mainstream media has been consolidated to such an extent that you will not get the truth about effectively the ruling class in this country and their actions. And that is the end of democracy, as far as I'm concerned. And only programs like yourselves, the ones that you and others run, give an opportunity for a segment of the population, at least, to try to understand what's going on. But I saw this happening back in the 60s when I, Bill Atwood, as you probably know, Bill
yeah.
Atwood was, wanted to do a piece, my piece on Vietnam in Look magazine. And he was, he asked him to meet with me. I went in to see him, and he said to me, as I walked in the door and shook his hand, he said, "You'll be pleased to know or maybe not pleased, I had a visitor last week." And I said, "Who is that?" And he said, "Averill Harriman."
Oh, wow.
I said, "Oh, and what did Governor Harriman want?" He said, "Well, he came to see me at the request of the President of the United States. And he said that he brought me the President's best wishes. And he had a favor to ask of me for the President." And I said, what was the favor?" "The favor was that I should never publish anything that Bill Pepper wrote." He said, "Now, how do you feel about that? You're not 30 years old, and here's the President of the United States is concerned about my publishing what you wrote on the war in Vietnam." And I said, "I'm more interested, Mr. Atwood, in what you said to Governor Harriman." What he said to you. He said, "Well, I'm going to meet him next week, and if we like what he says, we're going to examine his documentation, his photographs, and everything, he said, we're going to publish. Oh, and by the way, give the President my best regards."
that's another
time, another history.
It sure is.
Bill happened to have a heart attack about a week later, and went off Look magazine, and of course never published what I wrote. And he had the heart attack the evening after he had a similar session with Jim Garrison, the district attorney in New Orleans.
That's right, who was a champion, always believing that there was a conspiracy to kill the president.
Yes, and was working very hard on that. And Bill called Bobby Kennedy at 1 o'clock in the morning after that meeting with Garrison, and he said, "I've just been shaken in my shoes because the New Orleans DA has shown me evidence that the CIA were the operatives in terms of the assassination of your brother." And Bobby said to him, "We know that, but I've got to get the White House in order to convene a new investigation." Yeah. And that was at 1 a.m., and at 4 a.m., Bill had a heart attack.
Isn't that convenient?
And he just went off the thing. I spoke with his widow. He survived that heart attack, but he never returned to look again. And years later, I spoke to his widow, and she said, "Bill, Bill always respected your work and wanted to publish what you had written about Vietnam. But please don't ask me to ever come forward. I have children I have to raise in this country." So I think with that passing of Bill Atwood, we saw toward the end, any degree of independence in mainstream media. And I have spoken to all of the, one time or another in many years I've been involved. Remember, I convened the seminar on international human rights at Oxford University for a couple of years, and I had come to know so many of the mainstream names that you would know instantly, and they all basically said the same thing: we have to make a living, raise families, pay mortgages, and we have our own limits, and
they're afraid.
They're afraid. They can't do it. Even Tavis Smiley, who is the latest disinformer in terms of the King case, admitted to a friend of mine in Birmingham that when he was asked why, in his most recent book on the killing of King, why he never mentioned me or my work in all these years, he simply dropped his eyes and said, "Well, I have my limits." So that pretty much says it all. So what you're doing in providing this information to your listeners is a much-needed service, because it's not going to come elsewhere in this country. We have The Guardian to some extent in England and Le Monde in France, but over here we don't really have too many opportunities to get the truth out.
We've got to get the truth out. It's the only way. So who do you think? I know you can't name names here, but in terms of theory, who might that other gunman have been? Some agent with the CIA? Somebody like that?
Oh, he was a professional hitman, and there's no question about that.
Who would want Bobby Kennedy out of the picture at that time?
Well, they had to get rid of him. I mean, Bobby was going to do several things. One, he was going to follow in Jack's footsteps. He was going to... he was going to open up the assassination of his brother.
Right.
He was going to start a new investigation that was going to go heavily after the truth. That's number one. Two, he was going to push ahead and end the oil depletion allowance, which puts, as you know, over those whole period of time, put billions in the pockets of the oil men in this country. So he's going to finish that. He was going to end the war in Vietnam. He was committed to ending that war, as was his brother, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
His brother, in December of 63, was removing troops, advisors from Vietnam. So he was going on and on and on in a direction that the ruling elite and the powers that dominate public policy in America could not tolerate. They had to get rid of him.
So basically the killers of the president in 63 were the same players in 68 and probably went all the way through and got Martin Luther King as well.
We had the whole range of political assassinations. I've not looked that closely at Malcolm's assassination, but I would not be surprised, of course, from what I have known, what I have come to know about that one, that was a part of it as well. And there are a number of minor figures who were also getting in the way, who had to be assassinated. But the two major ones were, of course, Martin King and Robert Kennedy.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, of course, they were within 2 months of each other.
Oh, I know. It was unbelievable to me. I was 18 years old then, William, and I was in shock.
Yeah, Martin was to have been hit in Los Angeles initially, not in Memphis, in Los Angeles. They kept James Earl Ray in Los Angeles along with the backup military guys. They of course they didn't know each other, but they were all kept in the same.
Well, here's the thing that baffles me about those who either pled guilty as James Earl Ray did and then recanted. In Sirhan's case, I mean, he had hate literature of Kennedy, we think, in his apartment, unless that was planted there. He was there. That get the gun, I think Rosie Grier was there, the football player. Somebody wrestled the gun away from Sirhan. You just said he had a gun with him.
Yeah.
Had to have been. Was he mind controlled? Was he drugged?
Yeah.
I mean.
Yes, he was. It was a combination of the whole mind control program that the CIA had developed involved both chemicals, both drugs.
Was he a Kennedy hater?
No, absolutely not.
He was not.
Absolutely not. And he was programmed to produce certain materials that would later appear to incriminate him. Now, he was set up over a period of time. I noticed that there was a period of about 2 weeks where he disappeared, and we used Dr. Dan Brown from Harvard. Who spent over 70 hours with Sirhan, both hypnotized him and under free discourse, came away with a very clear picture that he was categorically mind programmed over an extensive period of time for this purpose, and was just simply not in control of his actions. And that's part of the reason why he actually does not remember, has never remembered, the events that the specific events that took place.
When your appeal is done, I definitely want to try to get an interview with Sirhan down there in San Diego. I'm going to need your help, obviously.
We're before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals now. We have had a pending appeal before them for quite a long period of time, and we are hoping that we will get an opportunity to make a case before the Ninth Circuit, which we regard as the most progressive court of appeals in the United States. If we ever had a chance to prevail, it would be before that court. And all we simply want that court to do is give us an evidentiary hearing.
Yeah.
Forget about freeing him. Forget about a new trial even. Just give us an evidentiary hearing. That will allow us to put on all of the new evidence of innocence and raise this whole question of doubt. And it is now possible to do that, both with the forensics because of the very clear, meticulous delineation of sounds that we've been able to get. So it's very clear now from the recordings that have been capable on the new technology of producing that there were two weapons being fired and the directions from which the weapons are being fired even. So aside from just people hearing things, we now have very clear forensic evidence that we would like an opportunity to show to a court.
Well, you know, I believe that he doesn't remember, as he's been saying. A guy who's been in jail for, 48 years now for that situation would obviously at this point say, I did it. But he just doesn't have – what's he like now as a person, William? Is he docile? Is he happy?
Yeah, it's remarkable. Having spent nearly half a century in prison, he's composed. We had, as you know, this lengthy parole hearing. Recently, he didn't really want to go to the parole hearing. He knows that they're just a farce.
It's the same thing. That's
right. It is a farce. That parole board and their two commissioners totally overrode all of the professional opinions and decided that Sirhan could still be a potential risk of violence if he was released, which is absurd. There were three psychologists, not just our own Dan Brown, but two state psychologists who came out and said that he's a very, very low risk of any of being of any violent possibility of once he's released. So these lay commissioners overrode their own professionals as well as ours, overrode three professional opinions with respect to that particular issue and used that as a means of keeping him in.
And you had a Kennedy aide there who was shot in the head who said there was another gunman. He didn't do it.
Absolutely. It was a total farce. He is, in my view, a political prisoner at this point in time and has been for quite a long period of time. But he, in answer to your question, he's composed. He spoke to them. He answered truthfully questions that they raised with him. Whatever he could remember, he talked to them about. He was not obnoxious, not arrogant. And the fact that Paul Schrade, who's now 91 years old, came to that hearing and spoke to him. And Paul, by the way, has been very close with Robert Kennedy Jr.
Yeah, he was just on our program, Robert Kennedy Jr. was, a few months ago. And I suspect, and he alluded to it, that he believes there's much more to his father's assassination.
I think he does. I think it's been a very painful experience for that family.
He's never met Sirhan, though, right?
No, he's never.
No,
met
that
Sirhan.
Would be an interesting.
And neither had Paul until
this event.
Parole hearing, until the parole.
Let's take one or two quick calls, William, and we'll definitely get you back in June. Let's go to Bill in Tampa, Florida. Bill, really fast. Only got about a minute and a half. Go ahead.
Okay, real quick question. Comment. My wife says she saw that on television, and she's convinced that Sirhan did it. My question relative to that is, has there been a forensic analysis of some kind? I know there has been of the sounds from what Mr. Pepper just said, but has there been a forensic analysis of the films or the videos that were taken at that time?
Yeah, we have looked at and tried to get as much footage as we absolutely could. What is beyond dispute? You can tell this to your wife, but it's beyond dispute. Is that Sirhan was always in front of the senator and somewhere between 3 and even 7 feet away from the senator, in front of him. And the senator was killed with bullets fired at powder burn range now from the rear in his back. And there, no one has ever maintained that Sirhan was in any way capable of firing those shots.
And I gotta believe, William, that the gun that was used to kill Robert F. Kennedy was probably the same gun, that same style of gun that Sirhan had to match that. Is that possible?
Yes. Well, I mean, the type of gun was clearly, was clearly the same. The number of bullets fired is extraordinary. We showed that forensically that over 13 shots were fired.
Oh, good. Well, that gun doesn't carry 13 bullets, that's for sure.
Sirhan's gun had 8 bullets. And listen very carefully to this, Bill, for your wife.
30 seconds left.
Got off 2 shots.
That's it.
So, 2 shots. And then his hand was pinned to the steam table. He lost control of his gun, hand and gun. After 2 shots, Bob was hit with 4.
Truly an amazing story. William, we're out of time. I want to stay in touch with you. We'll get you back here in June when your book on James Earl Ray and Martin Luther King is ready to go. And I want to thank you for spending the hour with us. That's William Pepper. I'll be back in a moment as we talk about the coming of Armageddon on Coast to Coast AM.